WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Ray Porter with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, July the 9th. The Sarasota County Commission approved a settlement with a private landowner that included a swap of three sandy Siesta Key beach lots as part of an approved settlement of a federal lawsuit this week, according to the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Siesta Beach Lots LLC had sued the county in federal court. In exchange for the three lots, the company gets a nearby lot adjacent to the beach and permission to build a house there. The Sarasota County Commission approved the settlement in a 4-1 vote. Commissioner Mark Smith voted no because the county had bought 162 Beach Road under the Neighborhood Parkland Acquisition Program. Political activist Lourdes Ramirez threatened to sue the county if it approved the land swap.
You are deciding, whether you like it or not, whether publicly owned land purchased with taxpayer-paid neighborhood parkland funds can be transferred to a private developer.
The approved settlement is different from one commissioners rejected in April. That one would have given the county four sandy beach lots, but a clear title could not be established for that fourth lot. The Roman Catholic Diocese of Venice will get a new bishop this weekend. The Reverend Emilio Biasco Aguero will be officially installed this Saturday at 2 p.m. at St. John the 23rd Catholic Church in Fort Myers. He will succeed Bishop Frank J. DeWayne, who has served since 2007. After his ordination and installation, the new bishop assumes the leadership of an estimated 260,000 Catholics in Southwest Florida. Biasco is a Capuchin Franciscan priest. He served as a missionary in Papua New Guinea and took on several assignments in Cuba. The new bishop has been a prominent advocate for immigrants and last served as pastor of the Shrine of the Sacred Heart in Washington, D.C. His appointment is widely considered to be a direct response by Pope Leo XIV to President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown. Good news for area residents regarding potential summer storms this year. Forecasters continue to scale down the number. Only 9 named storms are now expected this year. That's the lowest tally in a decade, thanks to El Nino. The cyclone-crushing weather pattern in the Atlantic has grown to record intensity. On Wednesday, Colorado State University announced it has reduced its forecast of named storms expected through the end of November. Only 4 storms are predicted to become hurricanes, with one of those becoming a major Category 3 or higher. But remember, it only takes one major storm impacting our area to turn a good year into a bad one. And finally, Florida's anti-woke law restricting how lessons on race and gender can be taught in colleges and universities, policies championed by Governor Ron DeSantis, appears to be on the way out. A panel of appeals court judges ruled this week the law violates the free speech rights of professors. The decision from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit is a devastating, possibly final blow to the so-called Stop Woke Act touted by the DeSantis administration. The judges affirmed a 2022 decision that labeled Florida's rules as positively dystopian. This has been Ray Porter with your WSLR news headlines for Thursday, July the 9th.
Welcome to The Detail. I'm your host, Kathy Antunes, and you are listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. The views and opinions of hosts, guests, and callers on WSLR are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of WSLR, its staff, administration, or volunteers. With me today is Glenn Gibellina. Did I say your name right, Glenn?
You did very well, yes. Right. Better than most.
I have a last name that people butcher, so I try to get right. Glenn Gibellina is a Manatee County resident. He is a businessman who's worked in the healthcare arena, and he has turned his focus onto the Manatee County Commission for the past number of years and become an engaged citizen who is now jumping in the ring to run for office. He is running for the District 4 Manatee County Commission seat. He is a Republican. Glenn, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Kathy, for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I was like you, and I was a citizen advocate focused on some issues that were important to me, and I decided to run. And it was, an educational experience. And I had been living in the county at that time for 11 years, and I worked in healthcare too. So I'm looking at you and I'm feeling like, oh, this is kind of a familiar story. But honestly, I don't know that much about you, Glenn. I don't live in Manatee County, but I understand people who do have probably heard your name and have probably seen you active in Manatee County issues. So let's kick it off. Tell us, how long have you lived in Manatee County? If you didn't grow up here, what brought you here? And what kind of work have you done?
All right. So I'm originally from Chicago. Mm-hmm. I came down here 40 years ago because of the weather. And I've been the healthcare is just a little part of my story. Most of the story is that I've been an activist. I am a general contractor. Okay. I've also been engaged with the Manatee County dais for 18 years, going up to that podium and addressing the concerns of the people. I'm on my third term with the Manatee County Affordable Advisory Board, so I've got a number of years under that. It took us 10 years to pass the ADU, the Auxiliary Dwelling Unit, that we pushed through from that housing board. But housing has always been a problem, and really a problem in the last couple of years.
Really tough.
And that's because, the developers don't step up to the plate. So after going all of these meetings, entering into the record, speaking my 3 minutes, trying to get responses from the government, trying to get responses from the administrator, trying to get responses even from my own elected officials, was getting more difficult year after year. A funny little story on that. I was up there so many times that about a year and a half ago, Amanda Ballard, who's in District 2, mm-hmm. called me a gadfly. over the record, on film, on YouTube during an official meeting. And I have wore that badge of honor ever since. So the history of the gadfly goes back to Socrates. So Socrates always went up to the council and he was always asking them tough questions. You know what? You're not answering the citizens. And, he stayed on them. And they finally said, you know what? You're a gadfly and you're going to drink this hemp. So that's how they did him in. I've been drinking the Kool-Aid, but I've been drinking the hemp.
I did not know that was the reason he had to drink the hemp.
Yep. Whoa. He was asking too many tough questions. And I guess I pushed their buttons because I do go up there and I do want accountability and transparency.
So his name was the gadfly. And, we're recording this right after July 4th. It's so key for citizens to be engaged with their local government. Glenn, what was it initially that prompted you 18 years ago to go down to a county commission meeting and speak up?
Again, I've been watching county commission meetings for a long time, and I was just getting to feel that all these people and organizations, and if you weren't part of the club and you weren't patting them on the back when you went up to that podium, you weren't going to be heard. And mm-hmm. if you were heard, there weren't going to be any answers for you. And there's several issues going on right now. The dog kennels, the wetlands. There is a lot going on in Manatee County.
For me, there's usually something that is compelling that brings people to a meeting and then they start paying attention. And I think if things are running well, people leave it at that. They get what they need taken care of. But we're in a time right now with our local government that they're not very responsive or just completely seem to not care at all. And I call it kind of captured. They've been captured by what many would refer to as the growth machine, development machine. As a general contractor, see, I find you're kind of different, Glenn, in that you work in that industry, but you're taking on the hand that feeds you, so to speak, or I think a lot of people in construction view it that way. They don't want to be taking on a developer-friendly county commission.
Well, the fact of the matter is, and, you know, I've been in construction all my life. You know, I worked with Jimmy Carter in South Dakota at a Habitat, the largest reservation build-out in 93. Mm-hmm. I was an honor to do that. So the difference between the developers and myself is that they don't give back to the community. That's the problem I have with them. So I was going to these meetings, and I think the pivotal point was several years ago, Aquaranda Bay. You familiar with that?
Yeah. That's Baruf, and it's near Cortez Fishing Village. And did it start out with that name, or is the name different now?
It was. Yeah, it's different now. It was. On the bay something. Aqua on the Bay.
Yeah, that's what you said, but now.
So we changed that name to Awkward on the Bay. Right? We had, during those hearings, we had to go to the Bradenton Convention Center. We had 800 people show up.
Mm-hmm. And because this is Cortez Fishing Village, this is kind of a quaint area.
No, this is off of 75.
Oh.
Oh, it's the street 75.
Okay, so all right, tell us where it is. My understanding is that it's going to be basically disrupting a lot of wildlife, a lot of...
Oh, he's already done that. I mean, we had an eagle's nest out there, and rumor has it that he rented a helicopter to get rid of the eagles, and then he called out his environmental guy, so, oh, there's no eagles here. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. No, this is off of 75th in West Manatee. In fact, right next to it is going Seaflower, which is another 5,000 homes that just got approved. And they go in there and they grub the land. They take out every shrub, every tree. They don't try to preserve anything. You know, he wasn't using water trucks. All the homes around there were dust storms every day. And he just contributed to the commissioners he wanted in office as yes men, and he got them.
Yeah. So Aqua by the Bay, would you say that was kind of the awakening in Manatee County? Because I don't think anything had captured citizens' attention the way that huge development on the water did.
And, you know, he went in there and he was going to put in boat docks and rip out the sea grapes. And, you know, he had all different plans. And the aha moment for me is when 800 people get ignored, there's a problem.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And you could count on one hand how many people were in favor of it, and they all work for him. Right?
Yeah.
Just like Mosaic. They bring in their busloads with the Mosaic shirts on. Oh, this is great. No, it's not.
Yeah.
And that's another issue with me.
Yeah. So the gadfly, I hear you have a T-shirt that you wear sometimes with me.
I did. I wore it to Carol Felt's swearing in, and I have a picture of her. Yes.
Yeah. Miss her, you know.
A lot. Her and I were good friends.
Yeah.
We were cut from the same cloth as far as the environment and listening to the people.
Yeah. We lost Carol a few months ago, and her seat is also now being filled in this election. How many commission seats are being filled?
Well, there is at large. Jason Bearden is not running again.
Okay.
And you have the vacant seat, which is Carol Feltz.
Uh-huh.
And you have District 2, which is Amanda Ballard.
Okay.
And Ed Bailey is running against her. And then you have District 4, my district, where Mike Ron is the incumbent, and I'm running against him. So there are four seats open. And if you think about it, this rubs me the wrong way as well. You have District 1 vacant since Carol's death.
Yeah.
That's where all the building's going on. and you have district commissioners. I wrote a white paper on this. It said, stay in your lane. You have no right to leave your district, go to District 1 who has no representation, tell those people, we know what's good for you. We're going to put another 5,000 homes here with zero representation.
That's Seaflower?
No, Seaflower is my district.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, this is Parrish and Ellington, District 1 out there. They keep moving the FDAB line to allow for more houses. But my point is, there's no representation. Everything should be put on hold until you have a district commissioner that represents those people before you approve another mega development.
Yeah, that's a fair point. You're running against Mike Ron, and he's the incumbent. He was elected in 2022,
correct?
Right? Okay, and I think 2022, that was, wasn't that the election where Anthony Pedicini,
yep.
Anthony Pedicini is a political consultant who's active throughout the state of Florida, but he was basically
a dirty campaign.
Well, you know, we can talk about dark money there, but it was a hugely developer-friendly slate that won in 2022, which included James Satcher, Van Ostenbridge,
Kevin KBO.
And, I think at the behest of certain developers who got in there, they were tired of getting no's on certain things like wetlands buffers. And so they, Pedicini got in there, which then all the wetlands protections, or many of them, were removed by that 2022 slate. You stop me if I'm wrong here.
No, you're absolutely correct.
Okay. But then in 2024, the voters galvanized, well, the residents, and Betsy Banach, a former Manatee County Commissioner, was part of this organizational effort. It was called Take Back Manatee. And basically, it was, anti-developer, anti-development, against developer control of Manatee County. That was very successful. And you got new commissioners in there.
Absolutely. So those campaigns had dark money. Their average campaign, I'll give you one example. Ray Turner was running in District 5 against Dr. McCann. Ray Turner had at his disposal and spent between $250,000 and $300,000 on the Pedicini train of negative campaigning. Dr. McCann had a fraction of that, but he was anti-development. His message was, stop the building. We need everything else to catch up. Mm-hmm. And despite being outspent 100-1, McCann won.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that anti-development is still continuing. Because let's face it, traffic's getting worse.
Yeah.
Right? Our travel time is getting worse. I don't care what time you go out during the day now, it's getting worse. Right?
Yeah.
The infrastructure isn't there. We're approving the developers with the promise of wider lanes and water. That's the wrong way to look at it. Until the infrastructure is there, don't put that shovel in the ground.
I think
you have to respect the surrounding community.
Yeah. So tell me about water. And, it's one of your issues on your website. And I have to say, I've looked at a lot of websites, Glenn. Yours is really specific about issues. You do a great job of explaining what you care about. It's specific, but it's not overwhelming. But tell me about water issues, because, again, getting back to Carlos Baruff, he served on the Southwest Florida Water Management District, right?
Oh, yeah, and he approved all his buddies' permits.
Yeah, well, and so you would think, I mean, he's a very prominent developer. He's active in politics. He's donated to political committees. I've written about that.
He ran for senator.
Yeah, he did. That's right. He ran back in 2012, maybe. I forget. Anyway, but it was a while ago. So he was at the helm of a lot of water management policy. And you're saying, and I've heard Betsy Banack talk about this too, but I want you to share with the audience. You're saying that water is a problem for Manatee County, and that overdevelopment is an even greater concern because Manatee County has water issues. What's going on with
water? Well, we not only have water issues, we have retention issues because the stripping of the wetlands. Wetlands is a natural...
But can you tell me, because I'm thinking drinking water.
Okay, I could pivot to that, sure.
Yeah, let's talk about that and then go to the wetlands.
So on the water issue is that they don't take everything into consideration when they say, oh, we have the capacity. No, we don't. They think we do, but we don't. We're in a drought right now.
Uh-huh.
There are folks that have poor water pressure from county water, right?
Yeah.
We get it from Lake Manatee. That level has dropped. We sell some of our water to Sarasota County.
Yeah, see, that's a big thing, isn't it? Manatee County is actually under contract to provide water to Sarasota County.
Right. So when we're going to get short, we got to go to Peace River. We're giving Sarasota our water, and then when we run low, we have to buy it at a higher rate from another water place. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think it's serious enough that people need to be concerned about whether they're going to have water in their homes?
Oh, absolutely. You know, right now is you look at the capacity, and capacity of fresh drinking water ties in with wastewater management.
Mm-hmm.
Because they go hand in hand. So every time you do 5,000 homes, the average is 125 gallons a day. You know, you're looking at several million gallons of water per month. But then you look at the wastewater side of it. How are those lift stations, which are about at capacity? How is the wastewater treatment plant, which is at capacity, going to handle the influx of all of that?
Hmm.
So as you go farther out, you may have to go through 10 lift stations that are close to capacity, and now you want to throw several million more gallons on those existing lift stations and more pressure on the wastewater treatment plant.
So what's the difference between a lift station and a wastewater treatment plant?
Well, the wastewater treatment plant is where it gets treated. That's the end of the line that all these lift stations pump that waste to the wastewater facility.
Okay, and the lift station is basically taking the refuse, you know, the wastewater, and gathering it and then pumping it to the wastewater. Okay.
No, it's pumping it to the next lift station.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So there may be 10 lift stations.
Really?
Down the line. Before it gets to that. And many of those are at capacity. But they don't tell you that.
No. Well, and see, this is like the guts of local government. It's your drinking water. It's, you know, your public safety. It's your kids' education. It's so close to home. And it has to function if we're going to have a good quality of life. Now, what would you just say to someone who would look at you and go, ah, wetlands, come on. You know, are you just like trying to preserve some weird frog? Like, this doesn't matter. We should be able to build. What do you say to that person? Why is wetlands preservation important for water access, for public safety? Tell me about that.
It's all interconnected. So for every acre of wetland, and we've lost thousands of acres over the years, you lose that capacity for storage. So when you pave over a wetland and put in a couple of hundred homes, that's impervious. That's why we have flooding, because the wetlands would act as a sponge, and now it's running off, and they have these so-called retention ponds that turn green after a couple of years. They're not the natural state it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem.
So the earth doesn't, because here's the piece I want to fill in for somebody who might not have thought about this much, is that the ground absorbs the water goes down to the aquifer, and that we need the aquifer to be constantly, you know, replenished with the natural rainfall and all, so that it can then feed our drink, you know, supply us with drinking water. And when you're talking about impervious, concrete doesn't absorb, you know, concrete doesn't allow the water to get down to the aquifer.
Neither do rooftops.
Yeah. So what was it that happened in 2022? Because just like Aqua by the Bay in, I don't know, 5-10 years prior to that, Manatee County was like, you know, just on fire about that Baruth development. And you had 800 people at the convention center for a meeting. That wetlands legislation, I got to tell you, Glenn, I saw Kevin Van Osten Bridge, and I've seen a lot of meetings, right? I've never seen anybody be so disrespectful to constituents as I did watching that man talk to constituents, and it was at a wetlands hearing. So what was going on there?
I call that the Napoleon syndrome.
Well, okay. Yeah, and I said what was going on there, though. I'm like, what were people so upset about with the wetlands? What was changing? Because the wetlands had been protected.
Right.
Right? And there were, you know, buffers. Like, you couldn't build. You had to be a certain distance away. So tell us about that issue and how it changed and why people just came out in droves.
Well, because they saw the aftermath of what happened when they took the wetlands away. So I've been on that. I've been on that issue for many, many years. And currently what the old wetland setback was 50 feet. Mm-hmm. So I did research around the state. Orlando in the middle of state has 100-foot buffer. So I went back to them and I said, we need to increase this to 100 feet. And they looked at me like I'm crazy. The developer backed, you had Stature, KVO, Ron and Bearden and Mike Ron. They're going, you know what? We're going to get rid of it because our developers, and you can watch them, they're getting texts on their phone during the meeting. It's all pre-orchestrated. They make motions even before it comes up. So we know the fix is in, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going, well, we're just going to get rid of it. So that increased the density for the builder, mm-hmm. that, you know, that wasn't allowed that density to begin with. But more importantly, so, it took away that sponge.
So, yeah, it took away the land acting as a sponge. It's flood control, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And to your point about density, so if there's more buildable land, then the developer has the right to build more dwellings. And when you build more dwellings, you just got the demand on services, the demand on infrastructure. So you're increasing the demand with the increased density. And then by reducing the buffer, you're putting more pressure on your infrastructure.
Exactly.
Because the land can't operate, you know, can't be the sponge, to your point. So Glenn, tell me about your opponent, Mike Ron. He's been there for how long?
He's only been there 3.5 years.
Okay. And how would you...
And I voted for him, by the way. And I campaigned for him.
Oh, okay. I want to hear about that because he's a Republican.
Right. Well, he was running against Misty Servia, and I felt that she wasn't doing a job. Boy, did I need a wake-up call, because compared to Misty, Ron is way worse.
Okay, how so?
Well, one, he is in the Hall of Fame of the Builders Association.
Okay.
So that tells me right off the bat, that this isn't going to go well for the citizens.
They have a Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Okay. So that's not a metaphor. That's a real thing.
Right. That's a real thing. Okay. So the other thing was his buddy who was president of the Buildings Association was John Mast.
Okay. So I'm going to stop you for a second.
Yep.
Sarasota County voters, residents, this is Teresa Mast's husband.
Correct.
So that, you know, we're neighbors and it's a small town. In a lot of ways, Sarasota, Manatee County, if you don't know someone, you know someone who knows them.
Right.
So Teresa Mast's husband is John Mast, and this is the Builders Association. Do you know the name that it goes by now?
Builders Association, something like that. Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of like the Gulf Coast Builders Exchange. It's like
right.
brothers
right.
or organization. Okay.
Right.
So Mike Ron's in the Hall of Fame. His buddy is John Mast.
Right.
Tell me more.
So what happened, you know, we were looking for an administrator and we spent tens of thousands of dollars to look. So on the surface, they told the citizens, we're going to go out and we're going to find the best administrator we can.
County administrator.
Okay. So during that time, out of the blue, and I was sitting in the dais, and Mike Ron says, I want to nominate John Mast as administrator. Not interim, permanent. He had the votes. I was in shock. What? Now they can run everything, right? Mm-hmm. Now you got the four votes you need. You got the administrator, and
so people need to understand if the county administrator is like a city manager. They're doing all they head up all the administration of
all the department heads. Yep.
Yeah. So essentially, Mike Ron, who's friends with John Mast, wanted to put the president of the Builders Association in charge of county government, which, I mean, I don't think that it's so stunning.
It was. It was a shock.
Yeah.
And the funny part about it, they had the votes to do it.
Uh-huh.
What happened was that they gave the job of negotiating the salary to Jason Bearden, who voted for him, by the way.
Okay.
So they had the votes. All they had to do was come to a number. And Jason said, we didn't come to numbers because he wanted to get paid what a previous administrator had with a master's in business. And Mast didn't have it. So I wouldn't give him that. I would give him a couple hundred thousand, but I wouldn't go up to the master level. And John Mast said, I don't want the job. Thank God. Thank God. Because we would have been screwed from that point on because you got the four votes.
Yeah, but there was a lot of news coverage of that, too. Do you think that there was some political heat? It seemed like the public was saying, are you serious?
Again, it got passed because those were in the back pocket of the developers. The only hiccup was the money amount. So what do they do? Oh, let's get Charlie Bishop in there. He's been with us 20 years. We can control him. We'll tell him in what direction to go. And that's who we're stuck with right now.
Well, so and people, you know, to remind listeners, Sherry Corrier was a very accomplished, deep institutional knowledge, well-regarded, deep roots in the community. And with so she was the county administrator. And when this slate in 2022 got voted in,
it fired the same day.
The first thing they did.
Yep.
The very first thing they did. Did that shock you?
Yes. It was a catastrophic failure. It just told me what direction they wanted to go. They wanted to build their administrator in there, and that was spearheaded by KVO. because KVO kept going there. Oh, we need to do this for my builder. We need to do. And he was backed by a lot of big builders.
Yeah. So let's talk. So that's Kevin Van Austin Bridge.
Right.
My favorite Kevin Van Austin Bridge story, because it's so nuts, is how he stole.
Bougainvillea.
Bougainvillea of a neighbor. Like, it was a constituent, right? And he was like on video.
Right.
With his bougainvillea.
Thrown in the back of his truck. Yep.
And it was worth $250.
He never said an apology. He never had any remorse.
No, he said, oh, it looks sick. And I wanted to.
I was saving it.
Like, you gotta be kidding me. And then, you know, so this thing does get investigated. And he's a county commissioner. And then when he loses, he filed a lawsuit because
right.
of loss.
Yep. So
that's kind of stunning, too. I've never heard of somebody just not accepting. I mean, it wasn't close, right?
No, no.
Okay.
People saw right through him. They were ready for a change. Again, it was the anti-developer movement that I'm hoping continues till the August primaries.
Yeah. So we're recording this. It's July 6th. This is going to air this week, July 8th. So for everybody listening, ballots are going to start to go out. And then your mailbox is going to get bombarded. If you're a voter in Manatee County, you're going to be bombarded with messaging. So tell me what that was like, you know, when that slate got elected with the Pettuccini effort and all of the developer money. What was going on to get these folks elected? It's pretty typical, but that year it was worse. But we can expect this to start happening soon. So,
it already has. I'll give you an example. So in the last 7 days, I've received three oversized postcards, four color, both sides from my opponent, sent out to every Republican in District 4.
Okay.
We have 19,000 Republicans in District 4.
Mm-hmm.
So he has spent $57,000
mm-hmm.
in 1 week
yeah.
from PAC money that does not affect his war chest of $61,000.
So people understand, and regular listeners are going to understand this, but you've got the campaign, which is, you know, the money that people donate to a candidate. And there's limits on that money.
$1,000.
Yeah, which is the state limit, because DeSantis got in to the local, you know, control and said, you're going to follow the state rules. In Sarasota County, our limit was 200, but DeSantis preempted that, his administration or the legislature. So it's $1,000, but political committees, people, and
unlimited.
Yeah, it's
unlimited.
Totally unlimited. It's totally unlimited. So your point three.
Well, let me connect the dots to you for on this.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
So the PAC that, because I look at the oversized, I see who sent it out.
Yeah, who sent it out?
Friends of Mike Ron.
Okay. Is it run by Mike Ron?
No.
Okay.
So let me connect the dots for you.
Okay.
Mike Ron is president of Seaport Manatee. He's the chair.
Okay. Is that the deep water port?
Yeah. Yeah. It's out in Manatee. Seaport Manatee.
Okay.
The lobbyist for that Seaport Manatee is Ballard Associates. David Ballard is the lobbyist for Seaport Manatee.
Is that Amanda's hubby?
No.
Okay.
No. So that's the lobbyist for the Seaport. Mike Ron is the chair that oversees the expenditures to that lobbyist group.
Okay.
Friends of Mike Ron, the treasurer, is the very same guy.
David Ballard?
Right.
Okay.
That has the PAC money that has spent $60,000 in the last week.
Mm-hmm. So what's the deal with that seaport? That what kind of favors are they looking for?
Well, again, you know, I do my homework. So I dug into Ballard lobbyists. And part of their arm is all they do is they go up to Tallahassee and they make special districts. So they want the seaport to be a special district, take the governance body out of the current county commission, 86 them, and then the governor would appoint five people for the board, one of them probably being my opponent, and we would have no say-so with the port. And if you remember, if you look at any of the meetings that the port meeting goes to, I'm up there hammering them. So when the new board came in, we had Jason and we had Dr. McCann. There was the seaport wanted to purchase some contaminated land across 41. So I did a deep dive on the title. All sorts of issues with the title.
Is that
go ahead? Tiny point.
Yeah. Okay, that's huge. It's the phosphate mining.
Right. But there was some land outside that.
Okay.
That the port wanted to expand.
Okay. But still, it's near Piney.
Right. But the point is that there was all sorts of problems with the title.
Okay.
So when KVO and Mike Ron and Amanda Ballard and that old group were in there, they said, we want Seaport to purchase that land. Delvana or Boyd was one the attorney for the other side that was selling the land. We gave them $500,000 of a non-refundable deposit on land they couldn't get a clear title to. So when the new board came in, we're going, "Whoa, hold on. We're not doing this." You know, and they did the big song and dance. "Oh, we'll fix the title by closing. We'll do this." You know, they were just trying to push that through. And, you know, credit to Bob McCann. You know, he's an attorney. He's a doctor. He has all the credentials. He looked over the contract and said, "Absolutely not. We would rather forfeit the $500,000 than continue this deal that would cost us millions down the road."
And why would it cost millions?
Well, because one, they would not be supplying a clean title.
Right.
Two, they were going to rent it out to their buddy for something like $100 a year. So you've lost half of the land right off the bat.
Okay.
It was just a bad deal all the way around. So I asked the port director, I said, "Let me get this straight. I went back on all the purchases in the last 10 years. You've bought three other properties without any non-refundable deposit. Why did you put up $500,000 to this, right?"
Yeah.
They don't answer. I had the CFO up there. I asked her, I said, "Tell me how this affected the bottom line of the seaport." Not an answer. Mm-hmm. I called out Carlos, the director. I said, "Tell me how this is going to affect the seaport." Doesn't answer. They come in for 5 minutes, slam, bam, thank you, man, go out the door, and they're done. They don't want to engage the public. They don't want to answer our questions.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, these creative ways to get around standard business practice, right? Like a clear title. You don't buy something if there's not a clear title. And to your point, a non-refundable deposit is like this invention that they did that typically never happens, if I'm hearing you right. Is that right?
Yeah, not on the last previous three land purchases. So I did a deep dive into the seaport attorneys. They are land attorneys, right? So I went to her and I said, "A first year law student would know this is a bad deal."
Yeah.
You approve this, you rubber stamp this, that this was a good deal.
Yeah.
And I brought that up again, I think, last month. And I said, in the future, we should get an attorney that wants to protect the land, you know, and in the future, we should do this and this. So the attorney was bad. They're all in bed with each other. The director, he wanted to push through a bad deal, and they write off $500,000, and they don't feel that they have to answer to the public. Now, if that was a special overlay, they would have bought that land. They wouldn't have to answer to anybody.
Okay. Normally I'd ask you for the audience what special overlay is, but that's just a certain land category. I want to move on to make sure that we cover some other things. We haven't talked about affordable housing. You played a huge role in that arena. You had pioneered building small homes from shipping containers. Tell me what you've learned serving on the Affordable Housing Advisory Board, because 3 terms, I'm assuming it's a 4-year term. Is that right?
Yes, 4-year
term. Okay. So you've been doing this for over a decade?
Yep.
Okay. Because, you know, Mr. Gibellino, we have such a problem with, we don't have a problem with luxury housing.
There's no, not at all.
In fact, there's like over a year's worth of inventory from the, you know, $1 to $5 million range. And then above $10 million, it's like 3 years of inventory. But for working people, you know, retired, raising families, it's just there's not enough inventory. It's not even close. So tell us about what you've done, what you've learned, what you want to do.
Well, again, 3 terms on the Affordable Housing Board, we have not moved the needle anywhere we need to be, right? An ADU took us 10 years to pass. That's ridiculous.
An accessory dwelling unit, which basically means you can have what's called a granny flat,
right,
apartment over your garage, just right, an accessory dwelling unit that you can rent or have an adult child or a mother-in-law live in. It actually makes a huge difference in housing supply. So it is great that you got that done. It took too long. What do you want to do next?
Well, the problem, again, goes back to the developers. That's not their market, right? They could care less. So I've been a member of the Florida Housing Coalition for over a decade. They are the Bible of workforce affordable housing. Mm-hmm. And I kept bringing all these best practices to the Affordable Housing Board and to the dais, and they have just ignored me. I'll give you one example.
Okay.
It's called up value, right? So when you take agricultural land and future land uses are three units per acre, mm-hmm, that's up value. You're up value.
Now, conferring density on farmland so that they can build houses, so it's worth more.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And the Florida Housing Coalition says that's added value, and it has to have public benefit.
Yeah.
And future land use means exactly that.
Uh-huh.
Future, not rubber stamped today, not yesterday, sometime between now and 2050. It never happens that way.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example. So you got a developer has 300 acres. They want to go to Res 3 or Res 6. So now they've got, you know, thousands of homes. Their ag land may have been worth $1 million, but now that we've changed the zoning, it's worth $50 million.
I'm going to stop you. So maybe you could put one house for 1,000 acres. Now you could put 3 houses to 6 houses an acre. So people understand, why are developers putting money into county commission races? It's because that's where the real estate decision is made, baby. That's where the fortunes are made. You get a land use change, a zoning change, and where you couldn't build before, now you can build 1,000 homes.
Right.
Okay.
So when you give added value, you have to give something back to the community, and they have never done that once. So, you know, being in this arena for over a decade, I'm big on not reinventing the wheel. Let's use the best practices that are out there.
Yeah.
So one of them is in Austin, Texas, they have inclusionary housing. So what that means is that 10% of everything we approve has to be workforce housing.
So it, you know, I've heard it called inclusionary zoning. So it's the idea you're talking about giving back. If we're going to give you the ability, instead of 5 homes, you can build 1,000, 10% of those better be affordable.
Right. Exactly. But here's the catch. They don't lose any money. Say their market rate is 350,000.
Yeah.
And workforce housing is at 200.
Mm-hmm.
So there's $150,000 difference. We, for allowing that upgrade, have to pay the developer the difference.
Yeah.
So the developer doesn't lose any money. No. They just don't want our class of people living in their walled communities.
Well, I would say they just want to make as much money as they can. You know, and to your point, people talk about average median income. And the thing about affordable housing is the definition gets really mangled because you've got affordable housing and attainable housing. And if you're talking about someone, you know, when I was growing up, if you worked an 8-hour day, you could afford to go to the doctor. You could afford to get yourself a car. You could afford to take a vacation. You know, today people work 8 hours and they can't even afford a place to live on their own. And this is this huge, structural gaps in our economy that have come out over time. So you're talking about on your website getting affordable housing, which is 60 to 80% of AMI. What does that mean? The average median income, people who make 60 to 80% of average. So we're talking restaurant workers or, you know, fast food workers, that the housing is for them, like they can afford it. What we've got actually in Sarasota, probably Manatee too, is they're calling affordable housing 120% of AMI. Yeah. And they call that attainable. That's like a $350,000 house.
Yeah, that's way out of line.
And you have to be making 6 figures these days to afford that level. And that's not what we're talking about, you know? So Glenn, if you think you can do that with more votes at the county commission, you think you can get these changes passed if you have a better, more...
There's a lot of tools in the toolbox that we could use. One of, and I just want to do a shout out to United Way. For folks that want to know about the AMI, go to United Way, all right, and punch in Alice.
Asset limited income constraint.
Right. So yeah. There is a large percentage of people in Manatee County living check to check. It's astounding how many, right? But that's
our country now.
Right. That's our country now.
Yeah. Glenn, we just have a few minutes. You voted for Mike Ron, and now you're running against him. So tell us why people should vote for you and how to find out more about you.
Well, you can find me at electglenjabalina.com. Go to my webpage.
Uh-huh.
I look at, you know, I'm a facts guy. I look at the voting record. And, you know, when Ron first of all, I thought Misty Servia wasn't doing a good enough job. And then that's the only reason I voted for Mike. But after he got in with the Builders Association, he flip-flopped, like from day one. It wasn't even gradual. It's, I'm in. Let's go. Let's get rid of the wetlands. Let's increase the density. I got to take care of my buddies. You know, I'm gonna try to get John Mast in there. Just an absolute 180. Mm-hmm. And people are fed up with the traffic.
Yeah.
Everything, the water, the traffic, the sewer, the wastewater, the wetlands, the retention. We're going in the wrong direction. We could do a full stop right now. And we would not hurt the construction industry. Go call a plumber. It's 2 weeks before they come out. So they say, oh, you'll put a lot of people out of work. Fact is, 67% of new workforce housing are done by illegals. And I'm a big trades guy. I think we need more students going from high school right to Manatee Technical College. You can come out of the box as a plumber, electrician, or a carpenter. making $100,000 a year with zero student debt.
Yeah, they make
for every five people that leave the trades, only two come back in. So we're pedaling backwards.
Glenn Gibellino, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's great to talk with an engaged citizen who's been at the dais, speaking out for 18 years. When I started doing this radio show, my intention was to give the people who only get 3 minutes at the meeting an hour to talk about what's important. It's how we keep our government accountable. Everybody, Manatee County voters, go to votemanatee.gov to check your voter registration to make sure it's current. This election is on August 18th. Your race versus Mike Ron is coming up on August 18th. Likewise, in Sarasota County, go to sarasotavotes.gov. And you'll be able to check your voter registration there as well. That's important to do. You can also request an absentee ballot. Glenn, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate your time and your advocacy.
All right. I would like to thank you as well. I do want to bring up one minor point that is on the 18th, it's over. Because there will be the primary. There is not a Democrat running in District 4. Mm-hmm. So whoever wins on the 18th is going to be sworn in November. So when people say, oh, I'll make a difference in November, it's too late.
You're right about that.
They have to do it on the 18th.
And it's a closed
primary.
Yeah, a lot of local races. Really, the actual important election is in August. It's that primary, which winds up really being the election in, you know, we've got Republican counties. So the Republican that wins, I know in Sarasota County, it's been more than 50 years that August election is the decisive election. So everybody be sure you vote. Is it a universal primary, Glenn?
Yes.
Really? So they didn't run? They didn't run a write-in candidate against you?
Oh, they did. Yes. That was a close primary. Yeah, okay. we had someone that doesn't even live in the county, doesn't even live in the district, doesn't have any skin in the game, and closed the primary because I would have gotten a lot of the non-party affiliation Democratic votes.
So it's not a universal primary.
No.
This is going to be decided by the Republicans.
Right.
Manatee County. That's a whole nother show. Maybe I'll have a bunch to talk about that sometime. Everybody, you've been listening to The Detail on WSLR 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida, and WBPV 100.1 LPFM in Bradenton, Florida. Be sure to stay tuned for more public affairs programming here on WSLR. Make it a great day.
Thank you so much.
Give in. that firm resolve.